Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 170 of Unblocking Crypto. How great to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
Man, a crazy week, a good week, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff to talk about. Not even really sure where to start, but I think maybe the first place to start is the U.S. House is releasing a draft of the bill that will regulate the entire crypto industry, and I think it's happening today. It's pretty much their updated version of the FIT 21 bill that passed last year. They're calling it the American Innovation and the Future of Digital Assets, a Blueprint for the 21st Century. So I'm intrigued to see what it looks like and what it's going to do, but I'm hoping that it's actually going to create something that we actually are talking about here in the near future and actually is passed by everybody involved.
Yeah, that'd be good. I mean, we've talked about regulatory clarity for years, and you know, that's the thing that this new administration is supposed to bring to the table. So if they can provide a framework for everybody to go by, maybe we'll get some of these country or companies that are leaving the country to come back.
Yeah, it's been interesting listening to like Bo Hines talk about this whole concept of a Bitcoin reserve for the United States is similar to what the space race was back in the day. And that right now the US is really looking into a bunch of extremely creative ways to acquire Bitcoin, and all expectations are there's going to be ideas on Trump's desk before the August recess, which is only a couple months away at this point. So,
yeah, I mean, it's good to hear that they're moving forward on that, because it doesn't seem like they're going to release how much Bitcoin they hold in the different departments, or if they lost it or whatever happened. I mean, we're 2 months into a 30-day requirement to have that information released. So I'm not sure what's going on there.
Well, I did see too that the deputy director of the CIA, Michael Ellis, was pretty much on a podcast talking about he thinks Bitcoin is here to stay, and that the U.S. must get ahead of the game when it comes to beating our adversaries like China. So that's pretty exciting to see. I mean, granted, as a libertarian or more libertarian, it's not like I want the CIA spying on everything that I do, but they believe that Bitcoin and crypto is here. And we're starting to see even some of the Department of Treasury, the FinCEN group, which is their financial crimes enforcement network, sever other groups away from the financial system, right? So Hunan Group, which is Cambodia-based, they've apparently been laundering illicit proceeds from cyber crimes for years, north of like $4 billion in the last 4 years. And then there's a Burmese militia group, the Karen National Army, which I thought was funny, they called it Karen, that has been doing a bunch of pig butchering things on an industrial scale, which has also been billions of dollars of losses. And I guess for those people not familiar with pig butchering, it's the whole fraudulent romantic ties that people have and sending money to get somebody to come and live with you or whatever it's going to be, right? So yeah, it's exciting to see that they see it's here, and they're stopping other people from using typical treasury use cases.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we say it, or I say it every few podcasts, where it's like, yeah, from, you know, Bitcoin and the separation of state and money and all this, it's like, yeah, I would like for that to happen. But in order for Bitcoin to go where it's going to go, corporations have to get involved. Countries have to get involved. I mean, this has always been part of kind of the path that Bitcoin had to take. And so, yeah, I don't want, part of me philosophically is like, yeah, the U.S. government creating a strategic Bitcoin reserve is kind of anti-Bitcoin ethos. But at the same time, it's always been in the cookbook. It just is coming a lot faster than I thought it would. So it's, you know, people, I feel like Bitcoin purists didn't have enough time to like consume the MicroStrategy and all of the corporations getting involved and scooping up Bitcoin, and then having 4 to 8 years to absorb that before countries started to get involved. I feel like it's all sort of happening at once. And like, for me, I'm like, yeah, I knew in order for Bitcoin to go where it's going, corporations and institutions and everybody else, including sovereign like wealth funds, would need to get involved. So it's kind of a, right along the path, but it's all like on top of each other, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, no. So last week we talked a little bit about Arizona and how the governor was going to veto the Bitcoin bill if they didn't pass that Disabilities for Arizonans Act. Well, she didn't veto the bill. So she wrote a letter to the Senate pretty much talking about that Arizona's state retirement system is one of the strongest in the nation due to its sound and informed investments, and that retirement funds are not the place to trial untested assets like crypto. So not only did she veto it, but she also pretty much lied to everybody about why. So that I did see a tweet from Pomp saying, imagine the ignorance of a politician to believe that they can make investment decisions, which is also kind of funny too, because if you look at, this is the governor that all of a sudden is now an investment advisor for the state of Arizona on making decisions, what they can and can't do. Before it was, they had the ability to make up to 10%, and she just said, nope, this is not good, because I'm the governor, I get to make the decisions on what investments happen.
Crazy. Yeah, and I didn't write this down, but I remember reading something like that Arizona pension is only 75% funded, and it holds MicroStrategy stock. So, you know, it's just politics.
Yeah, so she's an idiot. Got it. Check. Yeah. So Arizona's somewhat out of the race right now, but North Carolina seems to be moving up quickly. Their Bitcoin reserve passed the House and is now moving to the Senate. So they have a chance now at jumping everybody else, since it seemed like everybody at the top is slowly moving forward or just getting out of the race altogether.
Yeah, I saw a updated map with X's on the states that had the bills had either died in the House or Senate or been vetoed. And yeah, I mean, it's like we talked about, 30 or 40 states are going to try it. All we need is one. As soon as one of them passes, then the second one's going to have to be like, I was on the fence about this, but you know, if North Dakota does it, South Dakota's like, yeah, okay, we can't be the crappy Dakota.
Well, so there is not a state that's done it, but it looks like there's a city that has done the first one. And so Roswell, New Mexico, I think they have the official first strategic Bitcoin reserve in the U.S. There was somebody that sent $3,000 of Bitcoin to Roswell, New Mexico, and what they had to do was hold it for at least 10 years, after which the fund can be used to pay for senior citizens living in Roswell, New Mexico, their water bills. Right? If it does accrue a minimum value of $1 million, the fund can be used as a liquid emergency fund up to 21% of its value for up to 5 years, as long as there's unanimous approval by the Roswell City Council for any declared disaster relief. So it looks like, when I saw online, there had been a signature made by the mayor of Roswell, New Mexico, that this was what they were accepting. So I don't know if they're going to be putting any money into it, but they had been somewhat already started and funded with $3,000. So I guess it's the first one, kind of, but it's more of a city than a state.
Well, even though it's a city and it's small and it's a small amount of money, at least they got the strategy right of sit on this for 10 years. Yeah. Like, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what actually happens with it and if it goes anywhere. But exciting to see. The other big thing that I saw that was really intriguing, there's a project, it's called Project Open. It's just submitted to the SEC. It's a pilot proposal that would enable equities to be issued, registered, and traded on public blockchains, which, I mean, we've been talking about RWAs for a little while. It was jointly proposed by the Solana Policy Institute, Superstate, and Orca. They are proposing this pilot program with a gated issuer cohort, 18-month duration, and SEC oversight baked in. So granted, Solana, their group is somewhat pushing it. It is talking about doing it on a public blockchain. So theoretically, if this gets approved, any public blockchain could possibly have this. And I mean, this is amazing if it does actually go through, just because, I mean, we've talked about it forever, is how long it takes a lot of these transactions to get finalized on the typical financial rails, whereas in a blockchain, it could take seconds or minutes, worst case.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like tokenizing securities is actually a pretty decent use case for this, because, you know, crypto stuff's traded 24/7. They just bumped up trading to like whatever it was, 24/6, something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of a natural thing. I mean, you're talking about trading stuff, and that, like that one actually fits pretty good.
And then, speaking of the SEC, they just ended their investigation into the PayPal stablecoin, PYUSD. That started back in what, November of 23, I think, with they pretty much came out and said no action is going to be taken by the SEC. So, yeah, things are changing. The SEC is changing. They're trying to enable innovation. So, good on them.
Yeah. And if I were PayPal, I'd be trying this stuff too. I mean, it, like, kind of a PayPal's, in my opinion, kind of a stale business. You know, I mean, they came out with eBay early internet days and it worked great. And it's kind of hasn't done much since. I mean, they added crypto, I don't even know, 5 years ago, maybe. But to do a little stable coin and kind of get mixed up so that their financial transactions are faster and they've got control over them. To me, that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at somebody like a Robinhood that in their Q1 revenues, 43% of their Q1 revenues were from crypto, right? So that's like $252 million out of their $583 million. Although the quarter before that was a record for them, almost $358 million. So they're down quarter over quarter in terms of crypto revenue, but they're still up more than 100% year over year. And what's crazy is none of this includes their acquisition of Bitstamp, which is another crypto exchange that's supposed to close mid-year. So, I mean, yeah, they're innovating, whereas I think PayPal is trying to, but Robinhood is definitely one of those companies that's kind of leading the pack right now.
Yeah, and along those same lines, Schwab said they're working on a plan to launch spot crypto transactions in the next 12 months, and that's Schwab. So you're starting, you know, Robinhood's one thing. Schwab's a different animal when it comes to getting into crypto exchange stuff.
Yeah, I saw that they had mentioned their traffic had increased 400% in Q4 to their crypto page at Schwab. And what's wild is Schwab had kind of mentioned that before. Morgan Stanley just came out and said they are interested in adding spot crypto trading to their E-Trade platform as early as next year. And their goal is to pretty much try to keep up with Charles Schwab, right? It's planning to do it in the next 12 months. So it's kind of interesting because now it's turning this spot trading into a commoditization at this point. I don't know if we're ever going to see Vanguard come out and say they want to do it. They're probably going to be the last to adopt it, but, and it's exciting to see Morgan Stanley and Schwab both saying we want in.
Yeah. And I've brought it up before with the SAB 121 stuff where, you know, you would log into your Bank of America or Wells Fargo and you see your checking account in dollars and savings in dollars and savings in Bitcoin. You could do the same thing when you log into your brokerage account and you see all of your normal stock stuff. And then there's like a crypto category and yours is blank. I think that would drive some people to get off of zero.
Well, SoFi is planning to come back to the U.S. They had exited a couple of years ago and paid the SEC like $45 million as a settlement over their crypto lending product that it had offered. But they have, what, 11 million customers here in the U.S. They plan to get back into crypto in the U.S. in the next 6 months. So, and pretty much they talked about it was a change in regulation here in the States. So it makes sense for them to come back. And it's exactly to your point, right? I mean, you're going to be able to open up a checking account through SoFi or whatever and see how much of it it's in crypto every time you look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. To me, that makes a difference.
Spot Bitcoin ETFs in the U.S. had another good week. 1.8 billion in inflows, third positive week in a row. I mean, last week was over 3 billion, so it's kind of going down a little bit. But, I mean, that's still, we're talking close to $5 billion in the past 2 weeks alone in inflows. So things are still looking good, considering that everybody's expecting the economy to tank at some point.
Yeah, you know, when everybody expects the economy to tank, I kind of like its chances to, like, stay steady. The economy usually drops when everybody thinks it's going to be just fine and everything's great. So most recessions, you never see them coming. So I put this on the list. And when you talk about the Bitcoin ETFs, Brown University's endowment bought into the IBIT, BlackRock Bitcoin Spot ETF. So the university endowments are another pool of funds that don't have a lot of Bitcoin exposure, but probably will soon.
Yeah, that makes them the third university, I think, to do that. They bought like almost 5 million, although they have, I think, 8 billion in total. So they got a long
way to go. The endowments are huge.
Yeah. It's definitely a good start. They got definitely a long ways to go. And I feel like since we're talking about buying Bitcoin, might as well start talking about strategy. They bought some more. Granted, it was small, so 180 million, which is just under 1,900 Bitcoin. So they now have over 555,000 Bitcoin. They have officially now exhausted their 21 billion at the money offering that they started last year. They've raised like over 28 billion. So they had that 21-21 plan that they now updated to a 42-42 plan with further increases possible.
Yeah. So the 21-21 plan, if you remember, all the way back to November of last year, was a 3-year plan. And they did it in 6 months. And then they went ahead and doubled it. And they talked. So I listened to their earnings call along with 150,000 other people, which is a crazy number of people to have on a quarterly earnings call for a public company. But they expect everything to be better. They up their targets for Bitcoin yield. They up their targets for everything. I mean, the funny thing is, you know, they had to absorb like almost a $6 million unrealized loss from when they changed over to the new FASB rules. And so I was hesitant to do anything as far as selling covered calls or whatever with MicroStrategy, because I was like, man, I don't know what is going to happen on this earnings call. And, you know, if it triggers like bots to buy and sell stocks based on earnings per share and things like that, like, man, I don't want to touch it. But it slid right through this earnings call. It had a little dip, but no big deal, and ended up going, I think Thursday before the call, it broke 400 for the first time in quite a while. So the strategy stuff seems to be working. And the feeling I got from when Michael Saylor was talking is basically saying, hey, sorry we used the ATM so much and suppressed the stock price. We're going to slow that down or stop it completely and let the price run, add some more volatility. And instead of using at the money or at the market to just buy the Bitcoin outright, they're going to use that to pay the dividends for Strike and Strife. So they're going to basically be paying 10% while Strike and Strife are buying the Bitcoin on the fixed income side. So they're way ahead on the ATM spend. I think they only spent just short of $7 billion on the fixed income side using debt and the STRF and STRK money. And so yep. I think they might slow play this a little bit and let the fixed income side catch up to the ATM side. And that should increase the IV. The implied volatility should go up, which would be good for the ETFs like MISTI and IMST to see a little bit more volatility and kind of be able to get more premium on the options plays. But it was a pretty interesting earnings call. I don't usually sit through them, but that's two out of the last three for them that have been really cool.
Well, I was reading a little bit about like Bernstein that came out and said he expects, or they expect, Strategy and corporate copycats could add $330 billion to the Bitcoin treasuries in the next 5 years. And from Strategy alone, they expect them to do 124 of that. So that's an insane number in the next 5 years of adding Bitcoin to their balance sheets.
Yeah, 5 years, to me, that means nobody else has really jumped in a big way. I mean, there's 5 years. I would think a lot of corporations would have 2-5% of their balance sheet covered with Bitcoin. And so if MicroStrategy is 120 of that, there's only $210 billion left for the other 5,000 public companies.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing it nowhere near the same scale as MicroStrategy, though. I mean, MicroStrategy is talking about 84 in 3 years, right? Which is, everybody thinks is insane. So, I mean, most of these other companies are buying 5 million, 20 million, something like that. They're not buying in the billions yet. So,
yeah, but I'd be interested to see what this 21 company does with Jack Mallers, Tether, and all those guys, because that their intention, from what I heard on a podcast with Jack Mallers, is to pass Strategy in Bitcoin holdings as far as public balance sheets go. So public company balance sheets go. So they definitely have a plan to get a lot of Bitcoin. I don't know how, I can't see Bitcoin's price hanging out in this $90,000 to $110,000 range for very long if these companies are actually going to do this.
Well, I think it's what NYDIG pretty much came out and said. All the dry powder, which is the share issuance from Bitcoin treasury companies, they expected to increase the Bitcoin price about $42,000 at least, right? And I mean, to your point, 21, they're starting at what, 10% of the MicroStrategy holdings? So
about
they,
that, yeah.
Yeah, they got a lot of catching up to do, and I'm not sure how they're going to do it that quickly, but it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, those guys know how to play financial games. So that's the name of the game here is, I mean, look at what MicroStrategy did, creating perpetual call dividend paying funds. I mean, they're trying all kinds of different things to generate revenue so that they can buy more Bitcoin.
Yeah, speaking of companies that like to buy and hold Bitcoin, Galaxy Digital is planning to list on the NASDAQ in the middle of May. They've been on the Toronto Stock Exchange for the last 5 years, but they're trying to get access to U.S. investors. So they're coming over to NASDAQ. What's unclear is how long they will be on both stock exchanges. I think they have to stay on the Toronto Stock Exchange for a certain amount of time, but it almost sounds like they're switching over to NASDAQ and leaving Canada.
Yeah, the more companies that get public doing this stuff, the easier it will be for other companies to do it as well. So I think it's good.
And then speaking of other companies in the crypto space, Ripple made an offer for Circle, which is the company that issues USDC. It was somewhere in the $4 to $5 billion range, and it was turned down for being too low. The largest crypto acquisition to date was, I think, when Stripe acquired Bridge for $1.1 billion. So this was 4 to 5x the size, and it was too low. But Circle does have, what, 61 billion market cap in stablecoins, and although their net income, I think last year, was only like 156 million. So Ripple says they're going to still look for more crypto infrastructure companies. And hey, when you can pretty much just print money like they're doing, then why not do something like that?
Yeah. And I mean, the stablecoin stuff, I mean, look at what Tether does. You know, they make a killing with under 100 employees. So as long as it's successful, you can make money there, but you really got to get that market adoption. You got to get global, you know, it's a pretty tall order, but it worked for them.
From a global perspective, I was reading, so that I think there was an announcement a week or two ago about CZ joining Kyrgyzstan. I don't even know how you say that name, but one of the stands over there, about their financial board pretty much. And he has proposed to them now to create a strategic reserve using Bitcoin and BNB, which they're planning to do. They're also planning to launch a crypto payments piece of it and educational programs that will be done by the Binance Academy. And then in addition to that, they're planning to launch a gold-backed stablecoin. They're going to call it the gold dollar USDKG. And it's going to be pegged to the U.S. dollar, starts sometime in Q3 of this year. It'll be backed with about $500 million of gold from their Ministry of Finance. They plan to increase it to more than $2 billion. And the goal being, it's really designed for cross-border transactions and international trade, focused mainly on Central Asia, with a possible future expansion to Southeast Asia and Middle East. So I know it is going to be over-collateralized, which is good, but kind of interesting to see another stablecoin pop up.
Yeah, and you know, it's weird to me because the Strike, the Jack Mallers company, they've already pretty much done this. You know, if you're in Europe or the UK or, you know, in the Americas, then Strike works with the local currency and Bitcoin. But if you're in these developing countries that have their own currency, nobody wants to operate in those currencies. So they just use USD, like they just use Tether. So instead of going through all this trouble to build all this new stuff, all they needed to really do was invite Strike to come in and start a business in the country so that you just onboard it immediately. I mean, they've already got all the infrastructure, all the rails are built. You want to do cross country or cross border payments. That's Strike's MO. So it's weird to me that people are reinventing the wheel. I mean, I guess it's early enough to do that. And it's not like Strike's got such a huge market share that they're the go-to, but man, it's a lot of work to start this stuff from scratch when you could just call up a company that's already existing.
Well, it doesn't mean that they won't kind of white label the Strike ecosystem, which is what El Salvador pretty much did with their Chivo wallet, right? So they're saying they're going to do their own thing, but I would be surprised if they're reinventing the wheel. They got to be leveraging somebody and trying to make money instead of just giving all the money to a company like Striker. And it's not a ton of money, but it is still money that they want to keep in their own pockets.
Yeah. But I mean, when you start to look at the cross-border payments, the incoming payments without all the fees, you know, that money's coming into the country to be spent. So there's a lot of advantages to using Strike or something similar to get money sent back into country so that it's spent. I mean, you're talking about 5% bump in GDP for El Salvador, something like that. Whole 3 to 5%. I mean, that's a huge number.
Yeah, I did see some news from the EU. Their anti-money laws rules are going to ban anonymous accounts and privacy coins here pretty soon, which is interesting, especially since Monero had a huge couple of weeks since I think there was a Bitcoin hack that someone turned that Bitcoin into Monero and the price shot up 50-60%. So I'm a little skeptical of this. I mean, the whole point of privacy is to make sure that you can still make transactions without the government knowing everything. And that's kind of why cash has always had such an important role, where if you can transact in cash and not have to tell the government anything. So I'll be interesting to see what really happens and where this goes. But I mean, no surprise there. Most of the EU has wanted to start tracking all the residents anyways.
Yeah, it's interesting because a few years ago when the United States was anti-crypto, Europe seemed to be pro-crypto. And now that the United States has kind of turned around, Europe has seemed to kind of put a lid on some things. And like the UK economics or treasury and economic secretary ruled out a strategic Bitcoin reserve as it's not appropriate for their market. It's like, we've talked about it before. The UK, like all you have is finance. You're stripped of all your resources. So, you know, if you're not going to jump into this pool, I don't know what you're going to do, but it's like, as soon as the United States becomes pro something, Europe and the UK starts to second guess their position.
Well, so the UK seems like they're starting to change their mind again. They just shared a draft legislation for crypto industry rules and regulations shortly after meeting with Scott Bessent. So they apparently discussed a greater collaboration on digital securities between the UK and the US. And I mean, right now, if you look at the UK, about 12% of their citizens own crypto. So the goal of this is to promote investor confidence while protecting customers as well. So yeah, I mean, kind of like most countries ping-ponging back and forth, now the UK seems to be wanting to get back into the crypto gaming.
Okay. I mean, like I said, if you're the UK, you don't really have much left. You need to jump on something new that's finance and technology involved. I mean, that should be right in their lane.
So jumping back to the privacy piece, I did see, so there's a layer two on Ethereum called Aztec that's been working for the past 8 years on development. And they're backed by A16Z, the Andreessen Horowitz crypto VC. They have just launched a public testnet, and the goal being making privacy the norm, not the exception. So what they're calling this L2 is the first fully programmable privacy solution for blockchain. So, I mean, I'm excited. I like the concept of that, or like the thought of that. I don't know much details other than that, but at least there are other companies heading down the, how do we keep certain transactions private and not show every single transaction to the government so they can decide whether or not you're making the right decision or not.
Yeah, no, I think that put it in the sandbox category of like trying to figure out ways to make this work.
I don't know, we were talking about Europe and the UK, I guess somewhat related to that. Canada looks like they're going to pick an ex-Bank of England guy, Mark Carney, who is also not a fan of Bitcoin, but he does like the idea of CBDCs. Shocker. So I don't know if it's officially closed yet. I think he had like 4 votes that he still needed to get. But yeah, Canada, while they were looking like they wanted to not have to deal with the whole trucker crisis that they did and the free and having free speech kind of being free, then they chose the guy that agrees with everything that Trudeau did.
Yeah, like lefties are gonna left. I mean, it's tough for me to think about voting for someone who's pro CBDC. Like, I could see being in a country where you don't get to pick your leader and that leader deciding that CBDCs are going to be applied to the country so they can track people's behavior and all that. But like to vote somebody in that would want to do that is a pretty wild thought for me to have.
Yeah. I did also kind of jumping back to the EU, Italy's central bank came out and said that crypto's ties to TradFi could spark market instability. And they were kind of blaming Trump's promotion of crypto as a potential threat to markets and intermediaries. So then despite all this, their largest bank over there just bought Bitcoin in January. Granted, it was 11 Bitcoin for $1 million. They're still kind of getting in. And it's crazy to me, like most of these companies do not realize that banks are one of the problems. But as the bank, they're saying crypto is the problem. Everybody else realizes that banks are the problem. So the whole traditional banking system has caused all kinds of problems with Choke Point 2.0. It's one of the reasons why I think why the Trump family has been so gung-ho about crypto is because they were getting debanked during all of this. So it's kind of a mess that are crazy that these banks can't see kind of the writing on the wall that if you're not going to be involved in crypto, you're probably going to be a dinosaur here in the near future and you're not going to last very long.
Yeah, but banks are kind of the part of the frying pan that the frogs are in. So it's kind of like it's just part of the infrastructure that nobody can really see as a problem. I mean, Wells Fargo creates fake accounts for people and they have to pay a big fine. And it's like, people just view that as the cost of doing business and having banks. It's just normal day, everyday stuff. So, you know, it's the same thing goes for all the overdraft fees and stuff like that. It's just like, it's just part of society. It's in the fabric. So you don't even notice that it's there. So there's a very small minority of people that can be like, you know what happens if banks had to act way more customer friendly as compared to everybody else? I mean, look how often they're open. Look how tough it is to send money. Look how many days it takes to settle things. Like these are 20, 30 year old speeds. Everything else has gotten faster and better, but I don't know. I think people view that as just kind of, it's just baked into everyday life.
Yeah. So speaking of trying to get things faster, we haven't really talked about World lately, but Sam Altman's eye scanning project just got banned in Indonesia, apparently for failing to register for the proper license. But they're also launching in 6 U.S. cities here very shortly: Atlanta, Austin, L.A., Miami, Nashville, and San Francisco. They're planning to roll out 7,500 of these eye scanning orbs by the end of the year, and planning to build an eye scanning orb plant in Richardson, Texas. So not sure who thought this was a good idea in the U.S. and how this got approved, but it finally made its way to the U.S.
Yeah, like the guy that's taking open AI and closing it and making it for profit is also going to want to scan your iris like for $15 or whatever. And that doesn't sound like a very good deal.
No, not so much. So I did also see the Maldives, which is a pretty small country out there and things to be trending downwards in terms of GDP. A Dubai office is planning to invest $8.8 billion to turn Maldives into a crypto hub. Right now, their annual GDP is about $7 billion. So this is larger than their annual GDP. It could potentially employ about 3% of the population. They've said they've already secured somewhere between $4 and $5 billion. So making them a crypto hub with a free market, free trade market, whatever, free trade zone would be really interesting to see where that goes and what happens in that area of the world.
Yeah. So the Maldives are one of those countries that has like awesome, like Fiji style yep. vacations and like high end luxury stuff where you're like over the water villas on the ocean and stuff like that. So it's kind of been way back on the back burner places for me to go. But if they become like super Bitcoin friendly, and I've already been to El Salvador and I just went to PubKey and got a beer this week, I'm like, I'm running out of places to go. So if they become like a super Bitcoin friendly place, we could vacation there.
Well, I think the problem being the US is it takes so long to get there. So it is a lot of traveling.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like Australia level, but with more connections because it's tiny.
Yep. So speaking of places you might not want to travel if you're a crypto person lately, France just had another crypto-related kidnapping. It's the third of this year, very similar to the Ledger one that happened in January. The father of a crypto entrepreneur was, I guess, stuffed into a van, ended up having his finger severed after there was a ransom demanded in crypto. The money was never given, and I think the French SWAT team, whatever, was able to get the guy back before anything else happened. But I don't know what's going on in France that everybody thinks they can go after crypto entrepreneurs.
Yeah, France, it seems, I mean, I don't know who did the kidnapping, if it was Frenchmen or if it was like some of the immigrant population that's kind of taken over there, but they're starting to lose a little bit of control.
Yeah, they aren't releasing any of that information, so I'm not sure. And maybe there's places you can find it, but not on the main news sites that I was looking at.
Right.
So another interesting thing that I saw, Tether is releasing what they call Tether AI. It's an upcoming launch described as an open source AI runtime that will enable peer-to-peer network of AI agents. It will also run on any device or hardware and integrate with crypto payments. So there's not a lot of information there, but it just sounds really interesting. And I'm intrigued to see what it does and what it will enable everybody else to do. But I mean, we've talked about Tether in the past. I think they turned into what, 4 different business units. And so now here's one of them kind of going after the AI space. And it's, yeah, it'll be interesting. Like it'll be a lot of fun to watch and see where things go with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before that AI agents aren't going to be able to get bank accounts, but they will be able to get crypto wallets. So maybe this is step one.
Yeah. And then VanEck was also in the news. There's a, what is it, token 2049 was over and somewhere else in the world. VanEck was there, talked with CZ, and shortly after that, they are now the first asset manager to file for a BNB ETF in the U.S. that it does include staking. So I think Europe has actually had several of these already, but this will be the first one in the U.S., which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't brought up like BNB and Binance coins and stuff like that in quite a while. So that's twice today. Maybe there's something cooking.
Yeah. And then, so I feel like we talked about this a while ago. There's been kind of this ongoing battle between Epic Games, who is the company that owns Fortnite, and then Apple. And there apparently was just a new ruling that for Apple, US apps are no longer barred from adding external links, buttons, or other ways to get users to leave the app to browse NFT collections owned by others. So historically, Apple has kept everybody in their app because they can take this 30% sales tax and charge on everything they do. So they made it really difficult for developers to link to any external marketplaces. That's changing. It means that Epic's going to bring Fortnite back to the US iOS App Store. What's crazy about this is Europe users have been able to do this already because of the EU's Digital Markets Act. So once again, we've talked about the EU kind of leading in a lot of this regulation space from stuff they put out there, and the US has been kind of dragging their feet. So the US is now kind of finally catching up to what Europe's been doing. The hope still is that we continue to move further and past what Europe's been doing and create a lot more clarity and kind of go from there. So, but I mean, that's exciting. I'm not an Apple ecosystem guy, partly because of things like this, but it'll be good for anybody that uses Apple to have options to be able to leave the Apple ecosystem and do some of this NFT stuff, especially in the gaming space.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before. It's kind of surprising that gaming hasn't figured out a way to integrate crypto and have a successful game. I mean, to have like the Fortnite of crypto in-game currencies or something like that. So, you know, this might be a step closer towards that.
And then the last thing that I had, it's kind of an interesting crypto-ish related conversation. So the company called Freight Technologies, they have just under a 5 million market cap. They're a freight logistics firm focused on cross-border trade between Mexico and the U.S., so which has kind of been decimated here recently. I think their share price dropped like 90% in the past 12 months. But what they have just done is they entered into an agreement of buying $20 million of the Trump meme coin. And the real reason was, it sounds like, to get a dinner with the president, because he promised dinner with him for the top, 25 holders. They secured the funding with a convertible note. Where have we heard that before? Strategy, right? With an institutional investor. I think they have a $1 million initial tranche already committed. They've also bought $8 million of the FET, which is an AI token. And with all of this, their shares jumped about 111% almost overnight. And then it went down like 26% in after hours trading. But I'll be interested to see what they're able to do, what they're able to accomplish if they do get a dinner with the president and become kind of the go-to solution of trading between Mexico and the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, it's real world stuff. Like, it's kind of, it's about that time in the cycle to see some people try some crazy stuff.
Exactly. All right, what else did I miss?
Not too much. Like I said, I went to PubKey and grabbed a beer, paid in Bitcoin on the Lightning Network. So that was cool. The bar is kind of like, it's a cool spot. It's in a real nice area around Washington Square Park, like Fifth Avenue and all that. And it's kind of like, it's almost got like a dive bar feel to it, but it's not really a dive bar. And then, you know, it's got like a couple back rooms and it's like passive Bitcoin. It's not so in your face about being a Bitcoin bar. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
And then other than that, just the Bitcoin conference is later this month. We haven't really talked about it very much. I feel like it's losing a little bit of steam just from listening to people talk, that it's like, it's almost too big of a conference. So it's a lot of the people aren't going, but it's in Las Vegas. So I would think they're going to go pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, it's always interesting to see the people that are going to be talking there, and there will be quite a few that we don't even know who they are until afterwards, but Ross will be there. So it'll be interesting to hear from him.
Yep.
And I think there's a handful of Trumps that will be there other than Donald. But yeah, it should be intriguing to see where things go. I mean, last year is going to be hard to beat after everything that happened there, but man.
Yeah.
A lot of good
but
stuff.
It's there's usually some big announcement, some big, you know, something at Bitcoin conferences, especially at this point in the cycle. I mean, it's super weird to me. I mean, we're kind of knocking on the door of 100,000 again. We got all this good news, all these different things happening from U.S. federal government down to like the Strategy and other corporations. Like, all this stuff sounds super positive, and it almost feels like a bear market.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of conversations about it outside of Bitcoin circles. It's, I don't know. It's kind of strange right now. I don't know that I recall a time where the price, I mean, we should be like super pumped that we're in the 90s, but we don't even talk about price on here anymore.
Yeah. Cause it's almost like it's a disappointment right now from where everybody's expecting it to be. So,
right. It has that bear market feel, like price is lower than it should be.
Yeah. So, expecting to go up, I guess the question is just how much. So At what point does everybody else FOMO into it? And I guess I've heard a lot, if it gets to 200K, all of a sudden governments and everybody else is going to FOMO into it. And who knows where the price goes at that point?
Yeah, up mostly.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, that was a lot of stuff that we just covered in this past week. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what happens over the next week too.
Same here.
All right. Thanks, Sal. Chat later.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.